20 minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Yep, and just to remind you, we also read your pre-circulated evidence, so just bear that in mind when summarising it for you. Do you have a little summary that like Mr. Halley here?
Oh, look, I'll step through one.
Yep. So is it in front of us?
Oh, it's in the it's in the mid-page, midway through that bundle. The next set of statement pages.
Oh, that's his primary evidence. So this table document, is that your circulated evidence?
Yeah, I'm just going to step my way through a few parts of it rather than split
to date to date for June.
Correct.
Right. And that's the same as the pre-circulated evidence?
No. I wouldn't worry about it too much. I'll step through it. You'll be well aware of it. Right, tēnā koutou. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, councillors, and Commissioner Edwards. Federated Farmers appreciate the opportunity to speak to our written submission. And being mindful of timeliness, I will reiterate the key points of contention for ourselves and members. I'd just like to point out that almost 1,400 members have provided feedback and consultation on this, and that has helped inform our submission to you today. So the primary sector is crucial for Southland's well-being, and this plan reinforces the discrepancy often applied to regulatory documents between land use, environment and economics. In our view, economic implications have been effectively cast aside by this plan change.
You're reading from something now, so what are you actually reading?
Oh, it's the one that you've got there, sir, but there's parts that I'll be...
So what paragraph were you reading?
Paragraph 19.
Right, carry on.
Federated Farmers believes that the Council has not appropriately considered the economic cost of implementing the plan in its current form. We consider the proposed plan does not provide for a balancing of social, cultural, economic and environmental factors as required by the RMA. To illustrate, there are no objectives or policies that carry through the consideration of Southland's economic future in the proposed policy framework or in the Section 42A report. And Federated Farmers is concerned that without appropriate recognition of and provision for the use of land and water to support Southland's economy, the financial sustainability of farming in the region could be at risk. Just like to point out, the Southland region has a high reliance on the primary production. Approximately 24% of the regional GDP comes directly from the primary sector, twice that of the next closest region. Further, a significant proportion of the business community is reliant on spending by those in the rural sector. The economic and social implications of any regulation which impacts primary production are relatively greater than any other case in any other region in the country. So I'll step through to paragraph 28. Federated Farmers is concerned the plan is rural-centric and takes an overall negative tone towards the rural sector. As the plan relates to both rural and urban environments, the lack of rules or policy or objectives that affect change in urban discharges is noticeable by their absence. The RMA is an effects-based document, and we would have contemplated appropriate weighting to both urban and rural discharges. Moving to paragraph 32. Many farmers are concerned about the inequitable way Environment Southland requires rural discharges to continually up their game with regard to farm infrastructure, whereas urban stormwater and sewage systems are allowed to deteriorate and become outdated such that they can discharge untreated human wastewater with perceived impunity. This is not an effects-based approach, nor is it appropriate to the received environment, as it does not discriminate nutrient inputs. So I'll move to paragraph 34. Federated Farmers supports Southland's and Council's science program. However, we oppose the way Environment Southland has used the physiographic science to underpin the provisions of the interim proposed plan. The Southland membership unequivocally seeks that physiographics remain outside the plan framework. As you've heard, the Environment Southland has not quantified the risk of contaminant loss between zones. If that risk is only slightly greater, it is not justifiable, particularly given the economic reliance and cost imposed within significant regions and significant some of those different physiographic zones. We understand there are no good or bad physiographic zones, just that they need to be managed differently. There are specific good management practices and mitigating options that farmers can do to reduce the risk that contaminate losses while not imposing non-compliant assessment criteria. This approach will hinder innovation. So just to touch on non-complying consent, a number of our members have raised significant concern about that, and we don't think it's appropriate at all. I think restricted discretionary for any consents would be entirely appropriate. Federated Farmers is particularly concerned that Environment Southland has not ground truthed the model. This has been borne out by a number of our submissions. Our membership has expressed concern that the characteristics of the physiographic zone or zones attributed to their farm do not equate with their knowledge or understanding of their farm. Given that the physiographic science is a risk-based model and does not link directly to water state or trend, we consider it as premature for the work to underpin rules that seek to make some farming activities non-complying. The implications of such rules are significant in terms of rural productivity. Paragraph 38, to illustrate the non-complying status for new and extended dairy farms in the intensive winter grazing zone over 20 hectares in Albatera and peat wetlands is in our view not appropriate. There is insignificant information known about the allocation status of each catchment or nutrient loading rates, which will vary from site to site and year to year. This is not an effects-based approach, and the non-compliant status is unnecessarily onerous and simply not appropriate. The variation and site-specific elements demonstrate uncertainty about why physiographics should not be used to inform rules or the policy in this plan. We conclude that the conceptual model is a sound platform for understanding and explaining the spatial controls over hydrochemistry outcomes in Southland. It is exactly as the authors note, a conceptual model, and to rely on it to inform the policy framework is in our view erroneous. I'll take the paragraph 45, sir. I'd like to comment on the proposed intensive winter grazing provisions. Livestock require feeding all year round. In Southland, stock are unable to feed using extensive farming practices during the winter as cold temperatures impede grass growth and the climate is simply too unforgiving for stock. Soil saturation can also lead to damage to grass and soil, which in turn limits pasture growth. Our members acknowledge that intensive winter grazing on fodder crops is a high-risk period for both nutrient and sediment losses. Winter is also a critical time for animal welfare and our stock must feed. We oppose the hectare-based threshold for intensive winter grazing on fodder crops, which will push farmers who cannot meet the crop hectare threshold into a consenting regime. Many large-scale and hill and high country farmers will automatically require a consent because 50 hectares is simply insufficient to feed the thousands of stock units that they farm. As a practical alternative, we consider the intensive winter grazing must be retained as a permitted activity, subject to good management practice conditions, such as setback from waterways, feeding stock towards waterways, and feeding critical source areas and grass buffers last. This combined with proposed intensive winter grazing maps and a farm management plan will ensure all wintering is undertaken in accordance with good management practice. With respect to farm environmental management plans, sir, we support the concept of those plans as outlined in Appendix N of the proposed plan. Implementing good management practice will, in our view, improve that water quality. Bernadette Hunt, to my right, will expand on this issue on behalf of our Southland members. Applying good management practices on farm, which is clearly articulated in a management plan, should remove farmers from the resource consent regime. We are therefore naturally disappointed that the proposed plan does the opposite by introducing a requirement for farmers to gain resource consent to undertake normal farming activities. As part of that consent process, there is now a need to have a farm management plan. We firmly believe that the implementation of that good management practice in conjunction with that plan will improve water quality quicker and more efficiently than requiring resource consent for those normal farming activities. We also oppose the requirement of a nutrient budget in a management plan for all but dairy. I'd like to clarify that does not include dairy support. Dairy farms are already required to prepare extensive overseer budgets, which council reviews through the consenting process. To develop a nutrient budget for a mixed operation of crop rotations would be extremely complex, and we understand that overseer is particularly inaccurate outside the role of dairy farming. This was found by the Southland Economic Project, which had to exclude three sheep and beef farms from the study out of the 95 they selected because they were simply so complex they were unable to be modelled realistically in overseer. That project engaged experts who could not accurately model that for non-dairy farming systems, yet this plan would expect every individual farmer to model their farm using that program. If experts cannot apply overseer on these farms, how can our farmers be expected to, sir? Further, we do not believe any information gained from an overseer budget will provide any tangible benefit to non-dairy farmers, and it will not impact or improve on water quality. Again, good management practice is the answer to addressing the purpose of the interim plan, the NPS, and obtaining buy-in from the farming sector that contributes hugely to Southland's economic well-being. Turning to paragraph 67, sir, relating to hill and high country farming, our members are concerned with how this plan will affect their businesses. We consider the proposed plan makes inadequate provision for hill and high country farming systems. These properties cover thousands of hectares and run tens of thousands of stock units. The requirement for managing these properties are vastly different from those on an average lowland, intensively farmed landholding. The intensive winter grazing rules restrict wintering to 50 hectares as a permitted activity in the bedrock hill country physiographic zone. This activity threshold is not appropriate for a 5,000 hectare high country station. Under these proposed rules, sir, most hill and high country farms will require resource consent for the normal wintering activities, which offers little environmental benefit and may be economically crippling to implement. Proposed rule 23 is not an effects-based rule, as hill and high country stations are only wintering on a tiny percentage of their overall land holding. You've heard that from a number of submitters and some today, sir. Compared to a smaller, more intensive farm wintering on 50 hectares, an extensively farmed property is having a much smaller proportional impact on the environment, irrespective of whether wintering is over a large area or not. We consider the intensive winter grazing rule needs to be flexible enough to allow large farms to winter their stock as a permitted activity. We also consider intensive winter grazing on forage crops as a necessity in Southland, and therefore we also oppose any hectare restrictions on that grazing. Nutrient and sediment migration can then be managed using GMP. The stock exclusion provisions are inappropriate and in many circumstances unworkable for the high country farmers. The primary issue is animal welfare from our perspective, and all stock must have access to drinking water, and very few hill country farms have reticulated water systems for their stock. On many farms, it would be impossible to establish a farm-wide reticulated system for stock drinking water, and even if those systems could be installed, access to a power supply to pump that water to troughs could be challenging to many farms. Furthermore, as you know, the climate would hinder reliability on any system, and that would require constant monitoring and management of the piped network. Federated Farmers seeks that for hill and high country farms with an average stocking rate of 5 units or less per hectare, Rule 70 does not apply. This is a practical and effects-based approach. Turning to paragraph 73, sir, on cultivation setbacks, our members are concerned at the proposed setback provisions for cultivation. While we support setbacks for cultivation from waterways to reduce sediment and the loss of topsoil, the extent proposed in this plan is unnecessarily onerous. And I see that has changed in the Section 42 report, but we still find it a too big a burden. Under the plan as notified, and in the Section 42 report recommendation, there is a significant amount of land that would not be able to be worked for crops, further reducing rural productivity. Federated Farmers does not accept the view that sediment would migrate such long distances over well-established pasture under most climatic conditions. The exception, of course, is when the region is awash. A reduced setback relative to varying slopes, as promoted in our written submission, offers a practical balance whereby sediment loss is effectively managed while retaining that land for primary production. To apply such a wide setback is neither practical or justified in our view, sir. So overall, Federated Farmers is naturally disappointed of the focus of the proposed plan. As notified, it will, in our view, result in significant economic hardship to the rural sector and also to the Southland retailing sector. Federated Farmers is committed to improving relationships with stakeholders. We seek to develop practical solutions to water management while enabling environmentally sustainable growth within the primary sector. Good management practice, clearly prescribed for all stakeholders, is a practical solution to holding the line in this interim plan. So, Mr. Chairman, that brings me to the end of my submission. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'd just like to point out that I've also attached a document that provides some further commentary on our original submission points and how that relates to the Section 40 trade report.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. Thank you for doing that.
So I won't go through them ad nauseum. You've probably heard enough of me.
So what we're going to do now is take a cup of tea, and then we're going to come back in about 15, 20 minutes, and we'll see if we have any questions for you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Roy has to leave the hearing at afternoon tea time. He has a prior commitment, but he's undertaken to read the audio of the proceedings, which the hearing's being recorded, and he'll read the audio proceedings of this afternoon's session. So, Mr. Sycamore, we're now looking at questions for you, and Lord, we'll start at your end of the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just want to pick up, in your original evidence, you clause 36 talked about the new objective, and I haven't had a time to look through your further evidence and the changes. Have you got any idea what that new objective looks like?
Yes, I do.
Is it in the...
Yes, it is. It's in that 20-page breakdown of the...
Yep. And in your original evidence, paragraph 67, you've asked to for physiographic to be removed. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And in 81, you've talked about the winter grazing. Well, you've made quite a bit of comment around the set hectares. Have you given some consideration around percentage?
No, I have not.
Would that seem an appropriate solution to your query around the 2050?
Yeah, it certainly would. It would certainly make things equitable.
Darryl, stop. Ben, can I comment on that?
No, because questions are for this witness.
Okay, I thought we were all witnesses together, sorry.
No, how it works is the witness gives evidence and then we ask questions of that witness and the witness is not able to be assisted by other witnesses.
Okay, apologies.
That's all right.
So, Councillor McCallum, Mrs. Bernadette Hunt's going to be referring to that. But I can, in my view, it would make things more equitable for those larger farming operations if it was on a percentage basis.
Okay, and I will ask her if she had any, pre-warning, I'll ask you any idea of what that percentage would be if you thought that was appropriate. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Just on policy 33. It's the attachment of the plan provisions, no page number, it's policy 33.
Okay. In terms of wetlands?
Yeah, and it's the submission that it should include, be referred to as significant natural wetlands.
That's correct.
Is Federated Farmers have any perception of what that might mean in terms of numbers or where they might be?
No, I'm not familiar with any numbers. It's simply a point that a number of stakeholders and individuals have different views about what a wetland constitutes. I'm consciously aware that Federated Farmers is in the Environment Court at the moment up in North Island working out how to define a wetland, where some are intermittently wetted areas that are really pasture that have midges and damselflies and ducks using that water. Some stakeholders have challenged that and considered it as a wetland. We find that to be a bit of a nonsense. So we want it to be significant wetlands that are set out in the law for surety's sake.
We hear quite a few, we've heard from some submitters suggesting there's a continual reduction in wetlands, number of wetlands, or modified wetlands occurring throughout the Southland. Is that your understanding?
I have seen some documentation that does suggest that. Look, at the end of the day, our members want some sort of incentivisation and reward in terms of the plan, maybe longer terms of consent or such like for developing wetlands. So, you know, you can use some of your marginal land for wetland development and you get some level of incentivisation and that way everybody benefits.
Thank you.
Mark.
Right, now, and this, the information that you gave us today, I wanted to go to paragraph 72, where you say, federated farmers seek that for hill and high country farms, an average stocking rate of 5 units per or less per hectare, rule 70 doesn't apply. Now, you're obviously aware that the government's bringing in proposals for stock access to water, but we're not sure when that's going to come about, and we may or may not have to have something in the rule about that, in the plan about that. But I wanted to ask you...
sorry, just pause there. So are you aware of what the commission is asking about?
Yes.
The stock exclusion regulation?
That's correct, I understand.
Yeah, good.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Average stocking rate of 5 units per or less per hectare. We had quite a lot of discussion about stocking rate prior to the advertising of the plan, and some of the Alan you might be aware of, and we got quite a lot of feedback from farmers saying they didn't think that was a very good idea. So I just wonder how that would work and how much support there is for that amongst farmers.
Sure. Well, look, I wasn't involved with the drafting of the original submission, but what I understand is that we have almost 1,400 members in Southland, and they have feedback by submission or public meetings, and that was the policy position that the membership formed, that was an appropriate way, and from our perspective it was a pragmatic and measurable outcome.
All right, okay, good, thank you, that's good. And that would apply over the, would that apply over the whole land holding in the high country, or would it apply to an individual paddock basis if stock were brought in for a day or two or something and concentrated, but the overall farm, of course, it'd still be that stocking rate, but they might be concentrated on an area. Would you need to do something different there, do you think?
To be honest, I haven't put much thought into it, but what I would contemplate was where there's an average gradient of a certain level over certain areas, so at a paddock level, it would probably be more appropriate. A lot of those high country farms have the lower level foothills that you obviously have different elements going on there, and you would have different stocking rates in those lower areas.
Okay. All right, thank you. That's helpful. I want to go back to your evidence that you provided to us, and paragraph 75. You say that intensive intergrazing must remain the permitted activity subject to good management practice conditions, and you give some of those.
Yes.
What would the council need to do with people that didn't want to do those good management practices, or they were not suitable in their particular situation?
Sure. Farm management plans could actually set out what the good management practice provisions are, and then that would be set out as part of the arrangement between the council and the farmer, and then the council's obviously got their compliance arm to ensure that is met, much the same as any other enforcement compliance issue.
Okay, thank you, that sounds good. If paragraph 91-92, you talk about an auditing regime for management plans. I think the council and the chairman might be able to correct me here, has said that it doesn't think that that's appropriate. But how, you have sort of answered it just before, how will council be able to be ensured that, that the management plans are in fact being undertaken according to the way that they say they should be undertaken?
Sure, well, Environment Southland takes rates off the farming community. Those rates can be used to employ staff for compliance monitoring and inspections. They can then go about that inspection. If a farm is, indicates that they have actually got a good compliance record, they could have less frequent inspections.
Yeah.
If there is something that's problematic, then they can have increased inspections, maybe at the cost of the farmer, who knows, but I think it'd be much the same as any other compliance monitoring.
Okay, thanks. Yes, I get that. That sounds sounds good too. And the last question then relates to paragraph 106, and this relates to the variable setbacks that you suggest.
Yep.
And I suppose using your expertise as a consents officer in the past, can you assure us that the variable setback proposal that you advocate can be implemented properly and monitored for compliance? Because it does sound a little bit complicated.
Well, it's no more complicated than this plan, to be honest, sir. It's, yeah. Yeah, look, I can't give you any assurance. You know, okay. Like I said, when the regions are awash, no matter what setback you have, you're going to have sediment and nutrient issues. And that's life. That's reality. I can't put a silver lining on that.
The way you're promoting is a different distance related to the slope, close to a stream. That's my understanding of what you're promoting anyway.
That is correct. And I understand that the setback have changed now to 0 to 9 degrees. It's 5 metres, I understand. Is that correct? Or 8 degrees?
Yeah, the section 42A has made some alterations. It's a little bit simpler than what you propose, though.
Sure. Look, what the 42 report has suggested is certainly an improvement, but you know, from our understanding, it's overly onerous.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
So just a couple of comments. Thanks very much for providing that breakdown of Federated Farmers' response to the 42A report. That's very helpful, and just to assure you that we will turn the pages on that in detail, not right now obviously, but in our own time. Thank you for that. And thank you also for advising that you were not involved in drafting the original submissions. That's important for us to know. And also your power 9 and your evidence. Thanks for acknowledging that you're giving advocacy evidence, not expert planning witness evidence. That's greatly reduced the number of questions that I would otherwise have put to you. So I just really want to ask you about one thing. Paragraph 92, and I've got it, and Commissioner Rodway's asked you about this paragraph already. I have a different question. At the start of the hearing, we posed a number of questions to the reporting officers, and they answered them in writing, and that's all published on the webpage. I'm not sure if you've seen that or not. It doesn't.
I skimmed over it.
Yeah.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, their advice to us was that there was no intention to establish an auditing regime for farm environment management plans as part of the notified plan. So what I'd be interested to ask you to do is if you think there are provisions in the plan that gives the contrary implication, and I know Appendix N probably does that, but if you could just identify the provisions in the plan that you that had led you to think that there might be an auditing regime being imposed, be helpful if you could just let us know what they were.
Sure.
Because our advice is that there isn't supposed to be one.
Sure. Okay, thank you. So what type of time frame would you like that?
Oh, look, what time frame did we ask you to do your work?
As soon as possible.
I can do that.
That won't take you long. Is the end of the week or middle of next week?
Yeah,
something like
fine.
That. And just email it to one of our assistants over there. That would be great. So no further questions. We could have the next witness now.